We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
This is Evan Dawson. If you like conversations that take you beyond the headlines, join me on Connections. Every day, we dig into the issues shaping Rochester with the people living them, researching them, even trying to change them. No hot takes, no shouting most of the time. Just real conversations to keep you involved in your community. Listen to Connections wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Mind of Magnus. Our show has a simple premise. We're here to share the stories and life adventures of others to help expand our minds. I'm Matt Austin, and here's your host, Magnus.
Hello, hello, folks. Welcome again to another edition of the Mind of Magnus. Thanks for being here, folks. I am coming off of a very great weekend. It was the March Magnus event we had at our studio. It's an artist hangout, art supply swap. So I figured you guys would get a kick out of hearing how it's all been going around for the Mind of Magnus and the Magnus Apollo Design Studio, where I am recording out of up here near the High Falls area in the now warm again city of Rochester, New York. Yep, we had weather changing around on us as predicted, at least by the models from everything over the past few decades, talking about how environmental changes will happen. Loss of the jet stream, the loss of those very strict striations. Like if you look at the planet Jupiter, you see those curves, those lines, those are going there. At some point, when our planet kind of gets this mix around of odd stuff, we lose those nice distinct lines. We're having those wobbles in our atmospheres. Clouds going crazy. It's like why you see ice in Louisiana and why Canada has been warmer than us a handful of times, because things are wobbling around. We lost those nice striations in our atmosphere. So I was given a name of a scientist that I should reach out to talk about atmosphere sciences. I'm going to do that later today. So that actually was a topic that came up on one of the Discord servers I am on. There's been a few Discord servers been pinging me back and forth that are just full of people that are the Lunchador team, the other podcasters, shows that I've been on. And there's a lot going on in this world. Every single one of them has some unique thing seems to be unfolding in front of them. It's stressful. There's weird. There's news. There's chaos. And I don't know if that's a lot by design anymore, or it's just the nature of we keep juggling so many spinning plates. Eventually something's going to kind of give on the speech. But there's been a lot happening in this world. So that is why I try to set up these third places in my life. And I try these events out. This past month, I had a very, very fun thing I like to do. It's called March Magnus. And March Magnus is, an artist hangout, but also a clean sweep for things. Like I tell all my friends to clean out their studios, bring in shit they don't want anymore, and just put it up on the table. We have a giant free pile. In the first year, we had a free room. So this is like the fourth year. Let me see if I should start this one over again here. March Magnus is pretty much an artist art supply swap and artist hangout. When I'm trying to work on marketing, I got to remember those two things, right? What it is, what it does, two things. The name of it, what it's going to do. And I love hanging out with artists. I love using the tools that I have. I have a studio. The reason I have open studios, I like offering supplies. And when I do art events and stuff, I tend to collect these awesome, like, I don't know, these awesome little things, these collection of tools and paints and materials and media to play with. So I like collecting it, but I also hate seeing it wasted. So I got in the habit of bringing it out for people to use. But also, if something I've been here long enough in my studio that I picked stuff up that is dried, which should have been used, and that bothered me in a primal level. Always have. So 1 year, I decided to have a thing called March Magnus. Well, something event. We didn't know what it was going to be. We couldn't think of, like, I just wanted to have a spring cleaning thing. And I had the whole studio to myself. I had my studio, the studio next to me. I had two studios at that point in time. The studio beyond that was actually an empty studio. So I actually set up a giant room. Like, what if I just take a free room? I just put all the stuff I want to get rid of, put in this room here. And then I started helping friends of mine. I helped the studio next door clear out their back piles of paint. So much stuff. There's some of the paint had the date 98 on it. It had been there for a while. So we started bringing the stuff out, and then other ones started showing up, and we had a party. March Magnus was kind of born. It evolved by wanting to have an artist hangout too, because I want to use this stuff. I want to see people. I have a great studio. I want to share the space with people. So what I did was I have an artist hangout, and I'm trying to think, like, I like doing drawing prompts and ideas. So during the month, I'm like, you know what I should do is have a drawing prompt bracket. I'm not a sport basketball guy, so let's have a March Madness. Oh, I get it. Yeah. So turned out to be a very, very fun time. First year was hopping, and it was big. We had tables set up for it. People showed up. We had fun. It was a good time. It was kind of a swap more than a party, and that's fine. I like that. And then the party switched over. We had a area with a DJ playing. We had all sorts of cool stuff. Second year, a little less people on the trading, but still a good party, still a lot of fun. Third year was a lot of stuff. I mean, and people stayed around late. The second year, people stayed here at like 3 a.m. You know, last year was another one. I think I got out of here at 2. We had a pretty good art swap going on a bit. This year, I had a late start, which drove me a bit nuts. The marketing guy in me and the boss in me was very mad that I pushed things behind. So one of the cool things I did for my, you know, just for my own, you know, edification for the business here, I actually set up a person who I've been wanting to test out for social media marketing. And I asked her, I'm like, hey, can you help me get my social media just ready for this event? I just need someone else there to help. Sometimes it's just body doubling, working by yourself. Sometimes you just need one other person. And I was tired of it. I had like looked at some stuff and I had kind of brought on another person to do it and kind of fell through. So something had fallen through. So I already had given it up. Like the project in my head for the marketing, it was already given to someone else. So when that fell through, I didn't know how to take back over control of the project in my mind. So like a week or two went by, then I was guilted by it. So this is me being 100% honest in my entrepreneurial life right now. I realized, I'm like, you know what? I want to pull a trigger. So I had pinged a friend of mine about possibly doing it if she wanted to, and she's like, yeah, sure. So I messaged her, get it set up. She supplied me with the design idea. I'm like, I want this sort of idea, and it's already should be running by now. The concept of design. She worked on a quick little concept for it, put it out there, and I was able to like, I like this, I'm gonna change this, and I got to art exec my own project for once, which is an amazing feeling. It's a one where I was working on something else. It was one of the things that just turned to my left, and in my inbox there was the things I needed, and then every day she sent a message like, hey, this is the comment for this one. Like, this is exactly awesome. I appreciate this. This is exactly how I'd love to have in my, if people have listened to the show long enough, they realize there's always a conversation of me trying to find an assistant. And I've had people help out. I have wonderful people that my henchmen, lovingly referred to for the Mad Studio. I haven't quite found that perfect assistant yet. So over the course of a lifetime, trying to find one. This year, we tried it out, pulled it off. And in 2 weeks, we had probably 130 people roll through, give or take. I didn't keep track of it. And there was some points where I shook a hand and said hi to someone and didn't process it. But things on the free table this year, we had one big table. We did the same thing we did last year too, just one whole wall. Everything on this wall is free. Go nuts. And it's contained. It's in the garage. I have a barrier up and signs up. And this stuff is not free on my side. The free pile. I put little big signs pointing at it. Free pile here, free pile there. People keep bringing stuff in, and it is just zany with people. So I think I'll be standing there. Someone will reach in onto this pile and pull out a box. In the instance, one person was like, oh, it's a needle felt succulent. So there's like, oh, I always want to do this. This is great. No, I had no idea. Didn't expect it. It was caught me so off guard. I didn't expect it. I never knew it was in there. And every time I walked past, it would change. It was like this morphic thing. We decided that next year we're going to try to mount a camera over the top and look down at it. It'd be just like a time lapse of watch that thing just go crazy and evolve over time. So there was a handful of people that showed up for the barter battle. But the funniest thing this year was people walking up being like, nah, I don't want anything. I'm just trying to clear my place out. And I get it. There's been a lot of people who've been trying to like clear their studios out. And I think part of it has been now we're about 5-6 years away from the pandemic where a lot of hobbies were kind of got and a lot of tools and things just didn't stick to them. So this is the 5-year mark. If you didn't do it in 5 or 6 years, it's not going to be a thing you do. And what I appreciate about the friends that showed up here for this was that they show up with these things knowing that they want someone else to use the material, that it shouldn't be wasted. I don't want to sell it. I just want someone to use it. And I think that is something that we are seeing pop up universally now. Maybe it's just me. Probably with age as well. But the idea of hoarding little things tends to vanish a bit as you get older. The less things you carry, the better it is, I guess. But the nice thing also is having all your stuff where you like it and cleaning all your studios out so you are efficient as well. And I had a bunch of people show up with some amazing tools. They're like, yeah, I just need room for my other stuff. This is great. I just need room for my studio. Make it efficient. I'm paring it down. It was crazy to see the tools and devices you'd find there. There was like a light meter. There was a X, Y, or Z. It was so many things. We had an artist, an art teacher came up, and he goes to fucking Paris and draws and he literally yearly goes to Europe and is drawing and sketching around, and very awesome dude. And he picks up on the table these two palette knives, like, not, like for paints. And he's like, what are these doing here? Someone must have left them out. I'm like, no, that's the free table, man. That's some of the times there's awesome things in here. He's like, he put them in his pocket. I'm like, that's how it's supposed to be. Those are there. Those aren't out by accident. Those someone got rid of because the person who was trying to use those tools didn't work to them. They used them three or four times. And clearly they were used, but who's going to sell two little things if you picked it up as a hobby? That's not going to be a thing. And I had a wonderful day of people that showed up, and we had an artist hangout going at the same time. All day, people were there. People were playing games. We had just, I don't know, we supplied random snacks and foods. And it was so cold, though, that we couldn't open the garage door and have a nice sort of early spring bonfire sort of thing. I love doing that in the summertime, but it was too cold. So what I did was bring the outdoors indoors. I have a giant grass carpet. I set the against the orange, nice orange couch, put it on there. It was, and put a whole little zone of like wilderness. I put plants around it. I put all the greenery I had for Anomaly up on around there I can, and made it a place that was comfy. Another lounge, smoking lounge technically, because I don't like having anyone smoke over in the big social area, but it was a fun time. It turned out way better than I expected. There was definitely some things that I could have done better personally myself, but it was a wonderful turnout. So many awesome people. I say that I actually won the best barter battle because I am now currently staring at my six little guppies that were given to me for at the barter battle. I have a tank right in front of my computer, and I did it because I was setting up fake props that were like things to go in fish tanks, and I needed a tank, so I set it up for a while. I had it in front of me. So in front of me for a while, I had these like tank full of like cephalopods in front of me, and it was very cute. I got a kick out of it, and they, it was meant to be a temporary thing, but I loved having this little water feature in front of me. So I kind of lied to myself, just had a tank going with almost nothing in it. And I kept like, I should look at a little fish, but it's a little tiny tank. What can I put in there? In my barters, I have six new little guppies I get to stare at as I'm doing my audio recording. So I won the trade-off. The party went late. The table was cleared multiple times over, back and forth, new stuff. We had people come through. The teachers that wanted to grab some stuff stopped in and grabbed stuff, and the rest of it's been put into boxes already and organized for donation to the right groups that I think should use it. Like, there are some fabrics that are going to some groups that could really use the fabric. So I'm loving it. It was a wonderful time. I actually had one of the highlights for this whole thing for the March Magnus, a whole glass set. And I say glass, people thinking like drink glasses. No. Right before March Magnus, literally a week or so before, I was introduced to a man. Name is Jeffrey. Awesome dude. Used to make stained glass windows, and unfortunately he'd been kicked out of his studio. He'd been there for 34 years, give or take, and he just needed help cleaning the stuff out. So I showed up over there, and I took some time just to talk and catch up and hear what his life was like as I'm just pushing stuff around and cleaning, and I don't know. I helped bring some stuff down. I wish I could have done more. And in the studio was just a lifetime of a stained glass worker. In his collection of things were the glass samples he would get. He would get to the studio these boxes of small little glass panels that between 2 inches and 4 inches or 3-inch square tile size of every color you could imagine glass could be in. 30 years worth of it. So he's like, listen, take whatever you can to drop this thing off. And so I loaded my car up with as much of the stuff that had to be tossed away and brought it over here. I got as much as I could to get to his house. And I sent pictures to the shelves for people, maybe help him get the shelves out of there, anything I could to help. And they, watching everyone interact with 34 years of glass samples from a man is stunning. So I watched the world just like looked glass things at the lights. I should have put a bright light next to it so people would stare into it and look around that way. In retrospect, I should have done it. but it was wonderful. Artists, people who are like glass workers and a bunch of other people who work with glass that would want it, took the glass home with them to be used. It was wonderful. Great experience. These little things mattered. I'm actually going to send a message to him to let him know that the glass that was here was such a hit, and I wish him well. It's been nice to take that time between January and March and help those that help clear the studio out. Did a couple different folks, just little things, moving couches around. One of the women I know is pretty far along in her pregnancy, and I didn't want her moving some boxes. So help get her studio up, because she knows she's going to be have a lot of time to be up in the middle of the night and, you know, taking care of baby. So set her zone up better for it, and still have a place where she can kind of doodle if she wants to. With everything within arm's reach, I thought it was very nice. So a successful March Madness happened. We actually had a tie with the words for the March Madness drawing bracket. It came down to Beholder or a Gargoyle as a thing, as a drawing. And the prompts turned out to be at a gas station. So there was some people doodling a Beholder at a gas station and a Gargoyle at the gas station, because I asked them to decide, but they all decided to draw what they wanted to in those two options, which I thought was valid action. So the night went long. I probably got out of here just before 4 a.m. I think it was 3:30 when I finally actually got everything cleaned up and went home. Sunday, I was back again to clean and get stuff ready, because it's a working studio. People need to get back to work around here. So got it all cleaned up. Friends came back over to lend a hand and pick up, and it just had a nice time. But it was another long day. I got out of the studio for an all-day studio thing up until 1 in the morning again. So if I sound a little tired, it's because I've been running strong for a very fun time. I had so many messages, people enjoying themselves, people saying it was a wonderful experience. I'm so glad that the artist hangouts keep working. I'll do more of them. I already have the one for Halloween ready to go. Other ones we're kind of figuring out still, but I'm down for more third places for my fun folks to hang out with, man. It was nice to see a lot of people out and enjoying themselves, and I'm making friends, eating good food.
Do you feel like life is a lot lately? Yeah, same. I'm Emily Hesney Lynch, host of It's a Lot, a podcast about social media, parenthood, and beyond. We talk about the all-consuming, weird, and wonderful stuff that makes life a lot. Tune in for honest conversations with parents, social media experts, authors, content creators, and more. New episodes drop every other Tuesday. Check out It's a Lot wherever you get your podcasts. We're a proud member of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
I do have some wonderful mailbag to follow up on. So this is going to be also a bit of some Factoid Fridays. I have some Factoid Friday factoids that came in. And if you guys want to send them in, I got some text messages to the hotline. The hotline number, of course, is 585-310-2473. If you want to send anything in to the Mind of Magnus, please feel free to do so. The email address is always mindofmagnus@gmail.com, because I use Gmail because why not? Because I also hate setting up mail on my computer. If I can just log in globally, I can get so much more done that way. So on to a factor that came in, and this is from a buddy of mine's wife, actually, who listens in. I did not realize, apparently, she has been listening to my podcast ever since she listened to the Sadie one and has been going back through old ones on archives. So she's actually loves Rochester and gets a kick out of the old history stuff. And so she wanted to point out to anyone who likes this show, you want to go back and find some of my early episodes. A bunch of them exist on archive.org. I uploaded as many of the shows we could back in the day when we were at the Rochester Free Radio stations, and it was fun. So I made a kind of a cross-section of Rochester, and she's been going back through and listening to people she had kind of forgotten even were around. This old blast from the past. So I think those fall into about 10 to 15 years ago range. It's been a while now. It's amazing. I don't even know how many years ago it was that I was actually on. I did broadcast radio. Time is a blur, kind of how it is now, I feel like. But what I do like is how time has at least those moments where you can break it up by decades of design. I talk about a bunch how I like certain aesthetics, certain cultural, the zeitgeist of an element, like, you know, millennial grays for a while, those sort of colors, mid-century mod designs. And there's so much different ones. Like for a while, I was really into the Googie one, which is much like the atomic age. It started like 1940s, went through the 70s, but really peaked in that futuristic style we all know from the 50s and 60s. You see that? That's what Vegas has, those big signs with those kind of odd little boomerang-shaped things, those star patterns and rockets coming up. Very much retro future style because affected by there. I love that one. But I love listening about all that. I will go down, a designer can tell me about interior design, like eras, and down to the minutia, and I'm there for it. Tell me why a conversational pit should work in a new home. Tell me these things. So I say this enough because she sent me a lovely factoid that I need to share. And I also didn't realize that I was actually wrong on a factoid on this one because I had the name thinking it connected to somehow. So the factoid was sent in about the Memphis design. I did not realize that the name has no association with it. And I feel kind of embarrassed. I always thought the designers in this one was actually from that area. But what I'm speaking of is this little kind of weird little art corner of art history in the design of what is known as the Memphis design. Like I said, I lived in Memphis for a while and I heard about Memphis design when I was down there. And I think it just came up at that point in time. So I instantly associated that it was from Memphis, the city of Memphis in America. And somehow the design was connected with it. The artist lived there or something else. I could not figure out but just by name alone, I associated. So I have to say right away, to thank you because you corrected me on something I didn't realize. Because in 1981, this Italian designer, not American designer, Ettore Sottsass, his name is Sottsass. I like to spell them because I want people to get them right because I am murdering it with my New York Rochester accent. But Sottsass has got a group of creatives together in Milan and basically said, hey, let's stop being boring and let's do something that people will not like. At the time of the design, there was like super clean, super minimal, very serious. It was the fight back. 80s was getting very simple graphic images, graphic circles. It's thanks to computers and tech starting to pop up and CGI stuff and early CGI where like this is where you can make a simple circle or a square appear on a screen. This is early, early 80s. But we're seeing that effect and mixing with the classic minimalism that was fighting back from the 70s and 80s, crazy chaos and bright colors. So there's minimalist happening. And this man decides to make up this. And now the design I'm describing, you have seen multiple times. If you have ever been to a Taco Bell, seen that paper cup with that purple squiggle thing on it. If you've ever been in a food court ever when malls were a thing, you have seen the Memphis design. It is the design that you saw the opening scene for Saved by the Bell. Bright colors, weird shapes, just zigzag and squiggles. My studio has those colors in it inadvertently when I moved in, and I thought all I had to do was add some yellow triangles and a yellow squiggle pattern on the wall. It would be literally 90s color palette on here. So yes, this freaking Milan designer decides, hey, let's make this thing up. And it was never supposed to leave a gallery. He was not making it to be a worldwide trend. This man made a style just with him and his friends and chose colors that were like cheap and inexpensive. Oh my God. So she sent me this whole story about it. And like at the time, everything was going super clean, super minimal, but very serious. Everything had to make sense in the designs. He goes, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. So start making furniture and art that looked like came out of a cartoon, like bright colors, clashing patterns, squiggles next to square patterns, shapes that don't do anything. That's the thing that also really drove home. Those squiggles sticking outside the box, triangles and exclamation points and things like that are not something you want to see. So they become the Memphis group. And I thought that the Memphis group was because the location, I don't know, but no, it is such a crazier reason why. It's called the Memphis group because Bob Dylan had a record playing in the background. Not Bob Dylan himself, they're playing a Bob Dylan record. In the back of it, it starts skipping on one of the songs. The Stuck Inside of Mobile with the Memphis Blues Again. It was a song that the record kept going to or sticking to, and they like, let's just call it that. And years later, I thought somehow it meant about the city itself I was sitting in. In 1981's the Milan Design Fair, these guys just get together and decide to throw out this random weird stuff. That pattern you see, those little squiggle things in the background, those squiggle lines he called bacterial print. So it's bacteria. It's the Italian word for bacteria. Those little black squiggles and lines you'd see in the back of stuff. He purposely made bizarre random things. The movement sought to move away from functionalism, aiming for emotional artistic expression over any sort of practicality. It was meant to be pop art. It was meant to be a temporary sort of thing, just throw all these out there. They had sculptural shapes and cones and spheres and cylinders. They had all these bright stuff that made no sense to Milan. It was stuff wasn't just weird by accident. It was there. It was supposed to be expensive. It was supposed to live in galleries. And honestly, it kind of supposed to not be be liked. Like, they purposely wanted to make it not liked by someone. It's supposed to be confusing, loud, obnoxious, something that's in your face. And the whole point was to challenge what people thought was good taste even was. This is where the thing spawned from. It was art pretending to be furniture, art pretending to be art, or rebelling against the idea that design had to be logical, practical, or even likable. And somehow it escaped. How does it escape? How does it go from Milan to the world? Taco Bell, there's a path between all this, and that is MTV. Yep, MTV is one of the ones that really locked into this. 81, it sees this design, and then it goes crazy. Those wild patterns, neon colors, zigzags, confetti, all of those little things started showing up everywhere. TV sets, funds, graphics. This thing becomes the whole 80s. Because it landed when MTV grabbed it, everyone had their eyes on MTV. I mean, music really does shape culture. It's one of the ways it shapes culture. And that design just got locked into because MTV, the music of the era, was going to be in your face and rocking and all this sort of stuff. It was the perfect mix of fighting against the status quo with bright, bright colors, plastics, and you could just name it. So it bleeds into the whole world this way. But this path also has a fun sort of trajectory. It gets so bright the culture can't just gets burnt out from it. So this leads into late 80s and early 90s minimalism, and this is eventually the Y2K futurism we see later on. But again, it burnt so bright and I'm so obnoxious that by the 90s the reaction almost went the exact opposite of it. We see 90s grunge, industrial design, black, gray, muted colors. And this also comes into a bit of where we are starting to see dystopic movie trends coming in. There is Cold War stuff. There is things that are showing more of a grunge, less bright ultimate future, more realism is happening. So we see that pendulum swing where Memphis goes, everything should be loud and weird. And then 90s minimalism being like, dude, please calm down. Think of the difference between Neon Chaos by Saved by the Bell and the stripped-down industrial look of a coffee shop in the 90s you'd see. Such evastic different things. And by the late 90s, we're seeing it because there's also this looming Y2K style. Silver plastic, transparent electronics, blobs, chrome, inflatable future, and like the future, quote, around my in my hands right now, two quote marks, that the future is imagined by people in 1999. And the crazy thing is, we can actually see technology making the change inside this future ideas for the 1999ers. By the late 90s and early 2000s, designers actually had suddenly this new type of digital tools at their ready. Not just to draw things, but to like perfectly shape. So there's this thing called NURBS, N-U-R-B-S, non-uniform rational B-splines. Now I sound super technical, very futuristic, because it actually is. It's actually, it lets you design very smooth, precise, and almost liquid curves in CAD, in 3D software things. Like before this, a lot of 3D shapes were kind of faked with flat surfaces. Polygon counts. Now you can make something that actually perfectly curved, like those Oakley sunglasses you saw, everyone's futuristic watch that morphed around their wrist a little bit, those sleek alien looking forms. We saw this. This is the design coming out because we now have technology. So instead of those Memphis chaotic squiggles, you get these smooth, glassy, blob like shapes. Chrome. And we also get those clear plastic stuff too, which is another design into itself. That's material coolness sort of. But to be able to mold it and make stuff on these shapes, it changes the game. It's still playful, still weird. We still have that sort of vibe that we can still make the random weird things we want, but the future blob shapes, those are the things we're now seeing in this truly mathematical way of designing them. On screen, doing that, we can actually make this fluid sort of shapes. And this aesthetic plays through the early 2000s. At the same time, we're coming off of grunge into this post-futuristic thing where the 80s hopefulness and the golden age started to dwindle down. We're seeing factory works luring, crime on the way up. There's a lot of different stuff happening. There's actually a disparity between the left and right happening more and more. Post-Reagan on, we're seeing 20 years of this. So you can follow all these design trends, and I love every single one of these design trends, and just watching one evolve into the next and what the culture does and what the response is to this. So thank you for sending in this design ramble that I could talk about. If you want to send in a factoid, please feel free. Matt will give you the heads up on how to do it at the closing here. Thank you to all the folks on Patreon sending stuff in. And I want to say that those who showed up for the March Magnus, thank you, thank you, thank you. It was a fun time. I'm going to go feed my guppies here. And please follow along. Send me more stuff. I want to get some more stories. I want some more cool tales from you. And you have to excuse me if I happen to be saying some words in sets of threes, because I just got done rereading the Andy Weir book that's now a movie out called Project Hail Mary, and I'm kind of doing my Rocky impression. So it's very freeing to be able to talk about that character. If those following the book or like the movie go back to the book, it was such a great character that the world did not talk about Rocky. The back book doesn't talk about Rocky. The very first trailer movies do not show him at all. And when it was released by, hey, here's a trailer, watch nothing else about it until the movie comes out. Because the literary world loved that little alien rock. And now I can talk about it since the world knows about it. In fact, I'm trying to work on some sculptures and 3D stuff for it right now. So, hope everyone is enjoying themselves. Keep trying to be as great as you can. Send those little positive ripples out there and keep expanding those minds.
Do you have a crazy story, odd factoid, or want to share something you think will help expand the mind of Magnus? Let us know! Call our voicemail, 585-310-2473, visit mindofmagnus.com, or message us on social media at Magnus Apollo.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.